I have a section in the workbook, and it's there as an anchor, as a reference. I'm not going to refer to it a lot, and there is a thinking example that we're going to go through to kind of wrap all this up, but it's not a group activity. It's a personal reflection, and there's a section in your notebook for that as well. But it's there as a tool. It's not something that I'm not going to be offended if I'm looking and you're not writing something, or it's not going to bother me, okay? Okay. So weights and sins. Let us remove all the weights and the sins which easily beset us. The Hebrew writer, and so my section is going to be talking about weights and sins. The Hebrew writer in this portion is referring to something that his readers would have been very familiar with. Two Grecian games that they would have been very familiar with. The marathon race, which is referring to the weight, because clearly a runner would not be weighted down going through that type of a race. And the gladiator contest for the sins that easily entangle us, because a gladiator in that contest was up against something, fighting something. So this is going to be our preparation portion of the session. Weights are the internal obstacle. Sins are the external obstacle that we're going to go over a little bit later. And weights are the internal things that we have to be worried about. I was concerned because a lot of all the versions have different, they say weights, some say endurance, some say hindrance. So I really didn't want to get up here and spend 20 minutes talking about weights if that wasn't what it was, right? So that's why I went Greek. I'm not trying to be scholarly on you here. I just wanted to make sure I was talking about the right word. And so when I went to Jeff, and that first spelling is his spelling, I saw it spelled another way, and you can see how that's kind of really close. We're going to call this Akos. And I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong. We're going to call it Akos. So the way Jeff explained it to me is it's really all of those words. It's some sort of mass that could grow either small or become bigger and be a hindrance or an encumbrance. So really all those words that you're seeing in your versions. And the first thing we need to understand is that we're not going to know what these are unless we're in the race. A bystander watching this event going on has no clue what weight would burden them in that race. So I did all of my marathon running before kids. I mean, once I had kids with my job, I mean, and plus it just was too hard on my body. I switched to other races. But in marathon running, half the work is the training. The race is the fun part. The work is the training. And early on in my marathon training, I always trained with water and watered-down Gatorade. That's what I used in training. And one of the first training runs that I did that were set up before the marathon, there's like two or three training runs that they set up before the marathon. And one of the first ones that I participated in, it was sponsored by Powerade. And so I was running my little run, and I took the Powerade. That was a mistake because my body was used to Gatorade, not Powerade. Powerade was a weight for me and something that I would not have figured out unless I was running. And thank goodness I figured that out before race day because I never drank Powerade again. I'm a Gatorade girl. Right? So we do not figure these things out unless we're in the race. That's all right. That's right. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't me. So weights, are they really harmful? And what we want to think about, I want you to think about weights, is that when it's harmful is when it's causing me to falter, right? So it's something that makes my duty and my obligation harder. And the first thing that's unique about weights is that it's very individual. I can't look at my sister and say, oh, because I have this weight, it's your weight, right? It's something that could bother me. It would be something that would, that would not be a weight for a sister. So here we have some little Buddha replicas. My father got these in Singapore, and they're just from a gift shop. I use them back when I'm teaching the second graders, when we're talking about idols, and you know, they get that this is just a piece of wood or a piece of plastic. It's kind of silly that anybody would bow down to that. But when my father was in Singapore, there was a new family that was converted, and she had actual hand-carved idols for her family house that had been passed down for 6 generations. And when she became converted, she threw them out of her house. And I don't understand that. I mean, I have quilts in my house that were 3 generations that I'm never getting rid of, right? So I don't bow down to them. But to her, it was the weight she had to get rid of. So the first thing we need to understand about weights is that they're unique to us. And we have, and the weight that I have may not be something that my sister is bothered with. And then the next problem with weights is that they're legitimate things that are not a problem and not wrong in of themselves. It's only when they become a hindrance in my life that they're an issue. So the examples that I have here, and you may come up with others that I haven't really thought of because, like I said, it's unique to each person. Love of family or your home. I have a friend whose sister cleans the baseboards every week. Now, mine can use a little more attention than they're getting. But you know, every week, I mean, if you're that concerned about your house being that pristine, it might be a weight. Your job, I told some of you I was in Pensacola last week visiting my mother because it was her birthday Tuesday. She's 84. And one of the elders of the congregation is retired Navy, been in the Navy 24 years, and now he's working for the post office. Very common in Pensacola. It's a Navy town. Very common. And so I was talking to him, and Brother Woods irons all his shirts on Sunday to get ready for the week. And so I asked him this week, Brother Woods, you ready for the week? He's like, well, I got tomorrow off. I forgot it's President's Day. And I'm thankful for the extra day of rest. I'm thankful for my job. But I work to live. I don't live to work. That's kind of the right idea. I mean, the Bible tells us we're supposed to do what we do with all our might. I believe we're supposed to be good employees. I believe we're supposed to be good bosses. And, you know, I'm a CPA, so the next few weeks it's going to look like I don't have this all together here. But, you know, I do have setups to manage and watch that so that my job does not control me. And that takes a big concentration with the kind of job that I have because there's deadlines and there's things that are real. But I have to watch it so it doesn't become a weight. Our love of pleasure, I mean, I believe we should recreate. Even our Savior took time to get away from the masses and from the crowds to recharge and relax. So I totally believe we should do that. But if it's something I'm always focused on, that I have to have the next trip, I have to have the next activity, there's always something I'm focused on, it could be a weight. The cares of the world, I mean, the political unrest. I'm just telling y'all, I decided a couple months ago that I'm just not watching any TV till after the elections, right? And I am currently waiting on tax law to change. It could change everything that I'm doing for last year that they got to figure out, and it's not going to change because they're all trying to get elected. So I'm just really not going to watch any of this stuff until after the election. Or our hobbies could be classified as the care of the world. I mean, y'all who know me know that my relaxation is to create and to make things. I quilt, I needlepoint. I mean, when a needle and work in my flower garden, I mean, when a needle is running in my hand is when I'm the happiest. If my husband wants to watch a movie, I say yes because I know I can be running that needle while I'm watching the movie with him, right? That's the only way I enjoy it, because I need to make something with my hands for me to be happy, and it completely relaxes me. And my family knows that if I have not got a small portion of that, I am not a good person to be around, because that's what relaxes me. But let me tell you, ladies, I can just list out for you the stitch-alongs and the block of the months and the quilt retreats and the stitching retreats, and I am going to go to the quilt show. Felicia and I go every day, and that is not to be messed with. But, you know, I could consume my life with this, and it could become a weight. And guilt, who doesn't have some baggage or some history? And even though, praise God, you've been forgiven, doesn't it just still the memories there? Could that be a weight? I would refer you to Luke 22, 31 and through 32, where Jesus told Peter, Satan's asked for you, and I'm going to let him test you. Peter fails, by the way. And Jesus said, but I've prayed for you. And when you come back, I want you to strengthen your brethren. I was in Nashville earlier this year for a conference, and my sister lives north of Nashville. So we stayed the weekend. My husband came up, Joe, we stayed the weekend, but we worshiped in town because, like I said, my sister's north of Nashville, about 45 minutes. So we worshiped in town at this congregation. And during the announcements, another brother came up after the elder had given the announcements. Another brother came up and announced that, remember, this is the 1st of January, announced that they were going to start a program on Tuesday nights, completely free, but a program on Tuesday nights. And it was a program to help you get through addiction, depression, or anxiety. And the first 2 weeks, we're going to be explaining the program and what it entailed. And then it was like a six-month program. So that's why they spent the first 2 weeks kind of explaining it to you. And then the next 6 months, you would be in this program. And then he said, I know it works because I did it, and it helped me with my addiction. Whoa, that just changed that announcement. So here's a brother who sinned completely, recognized his sin, but understood with that sin that that needed a complete life change, and he had to fix that. And so he did. And he's on the road to heaven, and he's going, I ain't going by myself. I'm going to fill the bus. Let's go. You know, that's being a Peter. And then the cares of this world, I mean, the deceitfulness of riches, well, what does Luke 12, 18 through 21 say? I'm going to tear down my barns and build greater barns, and I'm just going to take my ease and eat, drink, and be merry. God said, you fool. This night your soul will be required of you. Or the next warning about riches that I was reminded of by Randy's talk a couple weeks ago, when he referred us to the church in Laodicea in Revelation 3:16-17, where God said, I will vomit you out of my mouth. Are we kind of not unsure about how he feels about that? I will vomit you out of my mouth because you say, I'm rich, have need of nothing. And you do not know that you're wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. I think the love of riches could be a weight. The other challenging things about weights is that they can change. When I was a young professional in Houston, I did not get married till I was 32, folks. So I was a young professional in Houston for a long time. In the congregation I attended, I was the youth group, which was fine because I had a lot of friends. I mean, I had all the young married women were my friends and still are, and little 80-year-olds were my friends. I took one of them to church with me. We rode to church together. I mean, I had a lot of fun. But as a young professional in Houston, y'all may not know this, but it's real popular to go out for happy hour on Friday. And I don't do that. So I bought mini season Astros tickets. And I bought symphony tickets. And that's what I had my friends do with me on Friday night. Was I went to the symphony or I went to the Astros game. Not a lot of fun as a young professional in Houston. But nowadays, do you think going out on Friday night to happy hour is a wait for me? I'm passed out on Friday night. That doesn't bother me one bit. I get home, I'm done, like we're ordering a pizza. So the challenge with weights is that they're mine. I can't judge that my weight is the same as my sister's. They change. And then I also want to make sure we understand that they don't have to be big. I'm afraid that we think that a weight is like this chain and ball around our ankle, and we're just dragging it. And if it's not that way, it's not a weight. When if 150 years ago, if you were a soldier and had this much shrapnel in your arm or leg, the pain would be unbelievable. And because it took particles of your clothing and other debris into your skin, with it, your only chance of survival was most common that they took the leg or the arm off. That weight. So our weights are unique to me. They can change over time. And they don't have to be big. Sin, which is the second thing we're warned about, is the external obstacle. In this context, the writer is most certainly talking about the sin of apostasy or the unbelief. He spent the whole epistle talking about it. He spent the whole epistle warning them not to go back into Judaism, which I don't think we're concerned with, but it is a sin of unbelief, which I believe all others measure from, is our sin of unbelief. John 16:8-9, and when he has come, he's going to convict the world of sin because they do not believe in me. And so what is that sin that so easily besets us? Because as you'll notice earlier, I picked up those words that it was every word in the sin that's easily. So I want to let you think about three areas where we need to watch out for these sins or these obstacles. Remember, this is the external obstacle. When I was back to my marathon training, we used to run all of our runs from Memorial Park. And one evening, we were running at dusk and leaving from Memorial Park and coming down to Voss and then go back. And somebody had a string, a rope from this sign anchoring across the sidewalk, and I face planted right through it. Not one of my most beautiful running moments, but you know, obstacles are real, but we can't always see them. We need to learn how to identify them, that there's something that is a sin that could be holding us back. And so our circumstances, or the community that we live in, would I function well in a community that didn't have a strong congregation? Maybe. I mean, I'm glad I don't have that obstacle. Is the company I'm keeping an obstacle to me? It could be my friends, coworkers. You know, I work in a big office. There's like 100 of us, and I'm pretty fortunate that my office is not a bunch of crazy, wild, you know, people, but there's still some people that aren't my close friends, right? Because they're not, we just don't hang out. It's just not good company. In our Constitution, I'm trying to make all C words here, but by the Constitution, I mean your mind. Is your mind set up to watch out for dangers? Do I prepare my mind to watch out for those sins? So the sins are evidently harmful and something that we need to watch out for. And in these categories, am I neglecting what God has asked me to do? Am I letting pride or jealousy of a situation make me sin? Am I so concerned with the persecution or the outcast mode I would be in if I was doing my Christian duties and acting like a Christian that I don't even go out into the world, that I don't even let my light shine? And then am I reckless with comparing myself to the world instead of the book? I mean, I know that's easy to do, right? Like tomorrow morning, when you're backing out of your driveway and you're heading to church to worship, and it's pretty obvious that nobody else on your street is, right? So we're just backing ourselves on the back, like, here I'm going, I'm heading off to church, and you're acting like a 100%er, and you're comparing yourself to people who aren't even trying. So sometimes we have to change our situation to make sure we're not going to get entangled in something that could cause us to sin. Sometimes we need different friends. Sometimes we need to treat some of our family different than the way we've treated them, because they're an anchor to our Christian walk. So now I want to think through a commandment that I think tests some of both of these. And just want you to kind of think through this with me to kind of give you an example of how I think both of these could work together. And the example I've chose for a commandment for us to study together is giving. And the reason I chose this one is because we're commanded to do it every week. It's private. We're actually told that it has to be private. It's private, so it's very personal. I don't share with you. And there's some pretty serious examples of it in the Bible. The first one is, I'm going to give you a history lesson. I'm not going to teach the doctrine of tithing. That's Old Testament. But what I want you to see is this 10% is false. They were giving way more than that. So I have a, this might be too small for you to see, but this is an example of 6,000 bushels. And Leviticus told them they're supposed to, Leviticus 19:9 told them they're supposed to leave the corners and the forgotten sheaves are supposed to be left. That's 1/60. The first fruits were supposed to be left, another 1/40. Now we get to the tithing that we all think about, the 10th, the 10%. Then we had the festival in Deuteronomy 14, which was another 10%, and the poor's tithes, which is about 1/30. So I am at 30%. But on top of this, a Jew would have a freewill offering at the festival of weeks. Animals are fruits and payments of vows, or things he devoted. Remission of debts in the year of release. Redemption of the firstborn, and thank offerings. A devout Jew was giving between 35 and 50% of what he earned to God. So what are my New Testament examples? In Acts 4:32-35, the new converts were selling their houses and land that they had and come and laying them at the apostles' feet and said, let's go save the world. In 2 Corinthians 8, the church of Macedonia gave beyond their ability freely. And then, of course, we have the example in Luke 2:41-44, where Jesus was watching the Pharisees just throwing money in the pot. He's going, no, and condemning them for it. And then the widow comes along and puts in two mites. And Jesus says, her. And so what I learned from these examples is that a converted Christian gives freely, beyond their ability, up to all. And so we have the commandment. Did I move it? No. Did I go back? Back. John, it's not going back. There we go. I can't see up there. I have to see down here. So in 2 Corinthians 9:5-8, that's where I see the commandment done to be purposefully, cheerfully, not sparingly, not grudgingly. He who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. And then Luke 6:38, giving shows trust in God's promise to bless the giver. Give and it will be given down to you to good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over. Do you see what I'm doing here? I'm asking us to watch the weight of riches and trust in the faith of our God, the Creator, instead of trusting in creations. And so I'm going to give you a Granddaddy Cuts example. Those of you who have been to my house know that my grandfather raised cranberries and blueberries. The Cuts brothers, Jack, Ross, that was my grandfather, Walter, and Ernest. I have labels framed all over my kitchen because my sweet dear aunt was a hoarder, and so when she died, she had labels for all of us, and nieces and nephews didn't have to fight over it, so I have Cuts Brothers labels for the cranberries and the blueberries. And blueberries are harvested in New Jersey in August. And they, 1 year, this is before I was born, it was raining during the picking. Now, I have workers hired to do the picking. It's a two-week harvest. They have workers hired to do the picking. And they're paying the workers by the day whether they're picking blueberries or not. But it is raining solid Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Sunday, it's as clear, it's as beautiful day as it is today. But the Cuts brothers don't pick on Sunday. And there was the added issue that they had converted a lot of the workers that they had as pickers. And the bus that would go from some Jack Ross and Ernest live in Tabernacle, the fields are about an hour away. Uncle Walter lived in Negretta, it was about halfway there. And they have workers that they would pick up along the way in these little towns to go to the fields. Well, the bus, that the Cutts Brothers bus that would pick up the workers to go to the fields also picked up everybody to come to Tabernacle to go to church on Sunday, and that's what the bus did. They didn't have to pick. Guess what happened Monday? Rain. The Cutts Brothers lost the entire crop of blueberries. Do you know what happened in October when they did the cranberry harvest? The largest cranberry harvest the Cutts Brothers had ever had. My grandfather believed it was Luke 6:38. I don't know. The only thing I'm completely sure about is that my grandfather was not guilty of building bigger barns. And this city girl better figure it out. Because I don't have things to measure it that way, but thank goodness my God has given me an activity to do every week where I can focus on it. I know that just throwing money in and not thinking about it is completely wrong. And that from there to giving everything beyond my ability is a huge spectrum. So I always have room to grow. I always have room to test my faith and my belief in God's promise. And I always have a measure to check this sin of weight of riches. It's so easy to catch me. And I get to do it every week. I think it's a challenge, and I think it's a blessing that we can watch our weights and sins with our commandment of giving. So I've gathered a few more verses to kind of look through and see some other areas besides just this little phrase we have of weights and sins, where the Bible talks to us about weights and sins. And you're going to be familiar with a lot of these. Isaiah 55:7, let the wicked forsake his way and the unrighteous man his thoughts. We got to get in the race. We got to get off the wrong path and we got to get in the race. Ephesians 4:22-24, Paul is telling us to put off the old man and renew your mind with righteousness and holiness. And then Romans 12:2-3, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove which is good. That's a weight tester. You're going to prove what's good and acceptable and the perfect will of God. Think soberly. Matthew 16:24-27, if you're going to come after Jesus, if you're going to be in the race, you're going to have to turn away from the obstacles of the world and follow God. And then you know I'd use this one, Matthew 18:8-10. If you have a hand or foot that causes you trouble, cut it off. Well, the scary thing about this passage that I left off is the verse before. And the verse before, verse 7, Jesus is telling us there are obstacles. They are inevitable. They're there. You got to find a way to not let them bother you and not let them weigh you down. So, this is not a spectator sport. This is one where I'm in the race, and I need to be constantly asking myself, is what I'm doing or what I'm dealing with helping or hindering my spiritual life? And so I want to give you a training plan. I didn't give it to you. Paul did. In Titus 2:11 through 13, and this is a little typo in your book because I have 11, 12, 13. It's really 11, 12, 12. 13 is Jade's, and I tried not to mess in her territory. So, but Twade is a preview of Jade's session. So I call this the training plan or grace training. For the grace of God has appeared, bringing salvation to all men, instructing us to deny ungodliness and worldly desires and to live sensibly, righteously, and godly in the present age. So we have grace training because it tells me that grace is instructing us. Grace is our teacher. That I'm supposed to live sensibly and godly. First of all, to deny ungodly lust, that's your weight training, to get rid of the unnecessary weights, and to live sensibly and soberly and righteously and godly in the present age. Whatever holds us back must be let go, and often we're going to need the help of Christ to do it, which is Jade's session. So there's a section in your book for you to put your own training plan. And I don't want you to do it now. It's just something I want you to think about. I'm on this committee and just recently went through this exercise with them where our group has a strategic plan or a mission, a goal. And so I'm chairman of one of the committees. And so I was supposed to list my goal, our committee's goal, and what task it would take to get to the goal based on meeting the strategic plan and the mission, and it had to be written down. And when I was going through that process with my group earlier this month, I'm like, why don't we do that with our spiritual lives, right? Like, why don't I say, here's what I need to work on, because I'm in the right race. I'm in the race. Here's what I need to work on to help me get there. And do I need an accountability partner? Do I need somebody to do this with? I mean, Raphaela, my friend here from our running group, she knows I put them on lots of things. Like we had a challenge last year, then half of us made it through. And you know, I have little things that I have them do, and we do them together though, because it works better because we do them together. Do I need an accountability partner? I can tell you that the best way to start is to start. They would tell you in running, swimming, I used to do triathlons too, the only way to run faster is to run faster. The only way to swim faster is to swim faster. Remember I told you I'm a quilter. The queen of quilting is the quarter-inch seam. If you have the quarter-inch seam mastered, you can make anything. The only way to get the quarter-inch seam mastered is to practice it. Practice, practice, practice. The only way you're going to be proficient at doing that quarter-inch seam is if you practice. And so, as Christians, we have to get our plan and figure out what we need to encompass to get the training plan working. And it can be tweaked, right? Because like I said before, things that bothered me before don't bother me now. So it's something that's constantly changing and evolving. You know, the race analogy is used, Paul used it quite often. The Hebrew writer is not the only one who used it. So I'm going to leave you with the final verse, one that we used a lot last year in our zeal passages. I pressed for the goal, for the prize of the upward call in Christ Jesus. We are not spectators. We are in the most important race that we have, and we need to be weight testers and obstacle watchers to make sure nothing impedes our goal and the race that we're in. And now you get a break. A real one.